on Racing HQ.
Racing HQ.
Racing HQ. Here's On the Pace.
Smolder lifting too strong. Smolder. The Kiwi has won the end of the Minion.
But it is all Lazarus clear of Tiger Tara. And once again, Lazarus has arisen.
Right on 10:30 on the Pace, and this morning Jason Bonington joins us. Morning, Jase.
Morning, Cozzy. How you been since I last saw you on Saturday morning?
Terrific, mate. What have you got for us?
I've got plenty, hopefully, here. A number of guests on the Pace. Of course, I'm filling in for the gallivanting Greg Hayes, who we believe is in Oslo at the moment, just enjoying life in Scandinavia. Our guests this morning will be Troy Williams, who's the Vice President of the newly formed New South Wales Trotters Association. We'll have the puppet Chris Alford, who, of course, got to 6,000 wins at Tabcorp Park Mountain yesterday. We'll have Ash Grives. We'll also have Mick Guerin come and join us for a bit, and Brad Hewitt. So a big show planned, and we'll start, hopefully, if Troy's on the line with Troy Williams. How are you, Troy? No, he's not there yet. Troy, we'll try and get him pretty soon. He's going to jump on and talk to us about that huge program at Tabcorp Park Menangle on Saturday night. Troy, are you with us now, mate?
Yeah, mate, I'm here.
Very exciting program here, mate. Three square gating races on Saturday night at Tabcorp Park Menangle, of course, headlined by the New South Wales Trotters Oaks and the La Cucaracha. You'll be expecting a big crowd out there at Tabcorp Park Menangle on Saturday night, I would have thought.
Yeah, Jason, obviously that's the aim, you know, to get behind and support the Trotters. And we've been doing a lot of marketing through social media and also through Trot Guide and a few other avenues. But you're aiming to get a nice crowd out there on site on Saturday night for our big Trotters meet.
Talk to us a little bit about the inauguration of the New South Wales Trotters Association. Troy, of course, Blake Fitzpatrick's the president. You're heavily involved as vice president. Amanda Rando's also on the executive panel. So give us a little insight into what the New South Wales Trotters Association is and what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, look, we were formed, it's a new association, and we were formed about sort of 9 months ago. And it's a very, very proactive executive and also committee team on the association. We sat down initially and came up with a strategic view of where we wanted to take the sport in the future. And obviously that's growing the numbers, making it more popular and having racing across New South Wales, not at just our metropolitan track at Menangle. But obviously they're a big supporter of the Trotter and we want to keep that going as well. So, we've got that. We've got marketing campaigns. And this weekend it leads into our biggest trotting carnival, and we want to make sure that, you know, we got the crowd there and we got the numbers. And we certainly got numbers because the races are four very strong fields across the card.
And it's right across May and through into early June, isn't it, this carnival? We've got a huge program this weekend and also next weekend with the Derby and a number of other races. So this is really the peak time for trotting in New South Wales.
Yeah, definitely the peak, and that's been our ultimate aim to, in the future, to obviously have this big program set out on one day. But we've spread it across a couple of weeks, and that's definitely been a benefit to get the numbers across those multiple nights of racing.
Troy, we've obviously witnessed the dramatic rise of trotting in Victoria over the past 4 or 5 years in particular. Is the association's goal to see sort of a similar profile rise for trotting in New South Wales, given it is actually the international gate? This is how we're going to globalise the sport?
Yeah, definitely. Victoria do a great job and have done previously to get their numbers where they are today. We obviously take out the same tact and want to hit those similar numbers to reach, you know, hopefully a third of our overall racing population here in New South Wales. Look, that's the aim. That's a long-term goal, and we'll take it off bit by bit and hopefully get to that point.
Is there support there from the other governing bodies in New South Wales?
Oh, definitely. They're a strong supporter of the Trotter. And really getting behind the association and members to, you know, drive this category forward.
Before we let you go, mate, tell us a little bit about the other festivities at Menangle on Saturday night. You'll be having a terrific short documentary launched or premiering on Saturday night on course, I'm told, and also the double-seater sulky rides.
Yeah, a bit of fun there. So, look, we sat down with New South Wales Harness Racing and a production company and came up with a concept and an idea on how we promote and follow our strategic program to get people into the trotting industry through breeding, through racing, and, you know, how we set aside some marketing plans to do that. And one of those was our documentary. So last week we filmed some quite long hours and got some great shots. And there'll be a little bit in the gig tonight about that. But the big launch on Saturday night at Club Menangle, where we'll launch this documentary video. And there's a few testimonials there as well. So it's definitely a great initiative. And on Saturday night also with the dual sulky rides, we're giving away, you know, a hot lap alongside some of the leading drivers to get general public interested and get them along and have their opportunity to go in the draw. So be on course and go in the draw to win a hot lap around Menangle and see what it feels like to sit behind one of these beautiful animals.
Yeah, and it'll be a shock to many, let me tell you, because it's not exactly what people might think. So much, thanks so much for your time this morning, Troy, and all the best with this weekend and going forward with the NSW Trotters Association.
Yeah, good on you, Jason. Thanks very much, and we'll see you all there Saturday night.
Yeah, going to be a massive night out there at Tabcorp Park, Menangle. Huge weekend coming up in the trots right throughout Australia. Our next guest now, this is the man of the moment, the puppet Chris Alford. How are you, Chris?
Good morning, Jace. How are you?
How's the head?
Oh, no, all good. Just had a quiet night. A big day today.
Yeah, I saw it was just
trials and races. So
I saw it was just a pub meal last night, so you kept it in check?
Yeah, no, I had to keep the kids in line.
Well, look, mate, how does it feel to be the first man to get this 6,000 win mark in Southern Hemisphere harness racing? It's been a big wind-up over the last couple of weeks. What was the feeling like when Diamond Grace got the job done in the final event at Tabcorp Park Mountain yesterday afternoon?
Yeah, big thrill. I had a bit of a countdown. I didn't think I'd be able to do it yesterday, but after the first horse one, I thought, at least I got sort of four half decent hopes in the last four, so I'd then ring Alison and get her to quickly whiz over because the kids wanted to be there, and they got there, and now I ran 2 seconds in a row, and I said, come on, Dad, what are you doing? We had to come all the way over here to watch, and thank goodness for last one, so it was a big thrill.
Well, you would have had to get him out of school again. Oh, look, you could have been damaging their education here to come down. You would have been slightly embarrassed if you couldn't get it done in that final race.
Yeah, not wrong. They had to front up at Kilmore North for the first, so I had to hope there. Thankfully it worked out well.
So what have the last couple of weeks been like altogether? There was plenty of fanfare, of course, going back 3.5 years when you reached your 5,000, but you were the second man to that summit behind your mate Gavin Lang. Has it been a little bit more nerve-wracking and exciting sort of breaching uncharted territory on your own?
Yeah, good to be being done. We've done everything else and to get there just before it, a big thrill, so now I'll be able to say welcome to my club. That's what Ted, when I got just a bit of banter, but he's going to be in the next couple of weeks, so it was a tight race, but I was lucky enough to get there.
All right, let's just quickly go back to the start. You're, of course, the son of hugely respected horseman Barry Alford, a man I'm sure remains your idol and inspiration in many ways. He saw so much of your success, but what would he make of the exalted territory you find yourself in now?
He put into me early and sort of started to take the and
Dodgy line here, unfortunately, with Chris. We might try and get the puppet back up again soon and re-ask him that question and a few others because it is his day and week in the sun after being the first man in Australasian history, of course, to get the 6,000 winners up. So we don't want to do it this way where we're just getting bits and bots of what the puppet's got to say. So we might try and get him back soon. In the meantime, we may we'll switch over to Michael Guerin and get his thoughts on what the puppet was able to achieve at Tabcorp Park Mountain yesterday and, of course, over the past 32 years. And then we'll try and get back to the puppet soon after that, of course. The first man, as we've mentioned, in Australasian history to get 6,000 winners, and it only took him 3.5 years to get from 5,000 to 6,000. So one of the other questions, hopefully, we might be able to broach with Chris when we speak to him again is just how high he can go. Spoke on the weekend with Michael Guerin, as a matter of fact, about numbers like 7, 8, 9, maybe even 10,000 winners before he hangs up the goggles and the silks, Chris Alford. Such an extraordinary career it's already been. But he's in the peak of his, or racing at the peak of his powers right now. Have we got Chris again now?
Yeah, Jace, how you going?
Oh, that's beautiful. You've shifted to the left, mate. You've taken 2 shimmies to the left, and now we can hear you beautifully, mate. We were just asking you that question about what Barry might think of the exalted territory you find yourself in now with the 6,000 wins.
Yeah, no, I think he'd be looking down, pretty proud of it. I'd say he taught me the hard way, but ended up being, the good way. I wouldn't have been able to learn any better off anyone else, I don't think.
I was just mentioning perhaps the wildest part of the whole equation here is that we're sort of eulogising you while you're still at the absolute top of your game. Normally when a footy player breaks the all-time games record or goals record, they're fairly well close to cooked, but you're still flying. Do you think you're driving as well or better than ever right now?
I think I'm driving okay. I do get to drive a lot of good horses, which sure helps me. And when you're driving and good horses, you go out with a bit more confidence and, you know, good horses, and that seem to find their spots where average ones sort of seem to get themselves in trouble. So I've got a lot of good trainers and owners that I drive for that put me on. So while they keep doing that, I'll keep doing what I'm doing.
So what is possible, mate? I was speaking with Michael Guerin over the weekend about this, and absurd numbers like 10,000 winners were being raised. But given it only took you 3.5 years to get between 5,000 and 6,000, those figures don't seem entirely out of reach. Do you sort of reach for the stars and think about crazy numbers like 10,000, or do you just take a moment to enjoy what you've achieved?
Oh, no, we pretty much just go, you know, day by day and just try and keep racking up winners. Yeah, like the last, as you said, last 1,000 come in sort of 3 and a bit years. So I still think I've got a good, you know, I look at Gavin and he's still driving right at the top of his game and he's 10 years older than me. So I'm pretty sure I've got at least another good 10 years in me. So I can get sort of 150, 200 a year for that. I'd, you know, be getting up there.
What motivates you most these days, Puppet? Is it the day-to-day, just trying to get as many winners as you possibly can? Is it the Group 1 races? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
No, I just seem to love racing for some crazy reason. I don't mind all the hours on the road. I sort of miss a bit not being at home all the time with the family. But, you know, to do this job, you got to give it 100%. And while I can give it 100%, I'll keep doing it. I like big races for good trainers, and I get just as much kick out of winning, you know, a country meeting for a 1 or 2 horse trainer.
And the last question before we let you go, mate, if you had to sit down with a young 16-year-old driver, maybe a James Herbertson or a Darby McGuigan now, and give them the best possible advice to be sitting where you are right now 3 decades or 4 decades on, what would be the few pieces of advice you would give them?
Pretty much just work hard, respect the people in the industry that you work with, because, you know, while you show them respect, they'll show you respect, and don't get too far ahead of yourself. Just keep your head down and work hard.
Well, you're universally admired, Puppet, and universally loved. We saw that on social media after you broke the 6,000 yesterday, and in the end, that's as much of an achievement as what you did yesterday, mate. Well done.
Thanks very much for having me on.
There's Chris Alford. He's breached uncharted territory with a 6,000 win to Tabcorp Park yesterday, and he did it in dramatic fashion. He had a couple of favourites or second favourites look like they might be the ones to get the job done, but in the end, he waited till the final race in the program with the John Ryan trained Diamond Grace. And to discuss a little bit more about the incredible achievement of Chris Alford, hopefully pretty soon we'll have Michael Guerin on the line. Of course, he was the one proffering, I think, during the weekend, the possibility that the Puppet might be able to get to the exalted territory or the wild territory of 10,000 wins. You'd be setting a mark that would be very, very hard for anybody else to achieve. More races these days, of course, helps the equation. So a young bloke like Greg Sugars, who's already got a lot of wins on the board, will get relatively close. Dexter Dunn might have to come over here and spend a bit more time in Australia, you would have thought, to get that mark, despite the fact he's already got a stack of wins on the board. But certainly I think the Puppet would be trying to get to the mark that would be very, very hard to catch. And Mick Guerin, as I mentioned, you were the one discussing the possibility of maybe 10,000 wins, and I don't think the Puppet's ruling that out.
Look, it's possible, Dave. Honest to say, good morning to you and to all the listeners around New South Wales. I think 8,000 is extremely realistic the way he drives at the moment. If you gave him, say, 250 wins a season for the next 8 seasons, that gets you to 8,000. He's still quite a young 49. Probably more motivation than body would be the issue, one would think, getting past that 60 mark, which, of course, is, you know, now just over 10 years away. But it's a remarkable achievement. And I say this all the time to people. We often talk about how great a rider Hugh Bowman is, Craig Williams, obviously, and Ollie over a long period. In harness racing, we sometimes take for granted how lucky we are. Like, we live in the era of Gavin Lang versus Chris Alford, with a support cast including people like Greg Sugars, who is world-class. And then we have an Australasian wide driving base that includes Dexter Dunn and Tony Hurley, who a lot of people think is the best horseman they've seen. So when you put those guys in and think that sometimes these guys all appear in the same race, it really is a remarkable level of horsemanship. And, you know, there's so many more people like Luke McCarthy you could add to that bunch. So it's a privileged time for the harness racing followers at the moment, and they probably don't respect that enough, I think.
Is the gap between the best and the rest growing as well? I can't think of another sport in the world, maybe tennis, where the top 10 or 12 thoroughly dominate, where the top 10 or 12, the top dozen drives in Australasia are so superior to the rest. So, I mean, that's not having a go at the hobby horsemen, but these guys are just so outstanding in what they do. We saw that on the weekend with some of the drives of Nathan Jack and Greg Sugars at Tabcorp Park Melton, that it really is a rare sport and that the best of the best are so much better than the rest.
I tell you what's happened, Jason. It's changed. The speed of the sport has changed enormously. It wasn't that long ago in quite a few places. It wasn't that long ago in Victoria. There was a rule where you couldn't go the middle half too slow. Because what used to happen is, in the days where Daddy Lang, you know, Graham Lang and those sort of guys are driving, or Ted Denler, often it would be jump to the front, go as slow as you can, and power home in what was then a fast 57 seconds. Now, when you do that and have racing which is like that, it's quite easy to get away with things. Whereas these days, if you move 1 inch too early, and we saw Chris do it last night, Chris in his penultimate drive before getting to the 6,000 liberated a horse. These days you liberate a horse, unlike the old days, horses will catch you because horses these days are so fit. We go on average 4 seconds faster for a mile than we did 20 years ago. 4 seconds, that's 50 metres. So what you mean is the best horse people will tend to dominate because they're less likely to make mistakes. I had a really good talk to my good friend James McDonald about this one day, and about Hong Kong galloping riders and why you get the best there and what they're good at, Joe Moreira and those guys. And he said the key factor to riding is one simple thing: don't lose momentum. And that's what the good drivers do these days. They get in the car, they get on tight reins, the horses gain momentum. As you see at Menangle, they gain momentum and they keep it up, rather than losing momentum. In the old days, it was a lot more push and shove. So these days, the similarities between the good jockeys and the good drivers is very similar. Whereas in the old days, there was a lot of sit-up, sprint-home sort of driving. And also, I think the bigger tracks have helped. I think the smaller tracks meant that poor driving could still be rewarded if you got the lead. These days, if you don't rate the horse correctly, someone will come off your back and beat you.
Yeah, that's that old credo of the horses running for certain drivers, I guess. But it's not just about it doesn't happen by chance. It's being able to continue to build that momentum. Just speaking to the puppet, just then we'll stay on him for a moment, Michael. He's breaching uncharted territory, as we've mentioned, in terms of records, but he's still at the top of his profession, and that's almost a sporting oxymoron, isn't it? It shouldn't be the case.
Well, the other thing too, and most importantly, is he's a good guy. In a lot of industries, you know, once you get to that level, you remove yourself from public life. A lot of top sports people do because, to be perfectly honest, they get horrendously hassled by people. Harness racing's smallness is an advantage. Chris Alford could walk down the street in most cities in Australasia and no one would know who he was. And that means you can stay grounded. You know, you're not going to nightclubs and having people fawning over you, and you're not having to go out in secret. Whereas, for example, an AFL footballer or a very good NRL footballer in Sydney, you do get that element of people, you know, encroaching on your life. Now, yeah, you're paid for that. That's fine. Harness racing doesn't have that. And for that reason, you don't find that they get particularly big-headed. Some of the young guys do, but they come back down to life. And what brings them back down to life is the fact that the two best drivers in Australia are 50 and, or about to be 50, and over 50. So also you can have that experience where, like, unlike an AFL footballer, your career's probably done by the time you're 35, and you're probably not intelligent enough or have enough EQ to understand how privileged you are. These guys have been there and done that. Chris Alford's had a bad injury. Gavin Lang had a very bad sickness, which he thought at one stage might kill him. And you come back from life with a different perspective and go, OK, I'm lucky to do this. And they both treat trainers, and more importantly, their horses that way, that they're the ones in the privileged position, not that you're privileged to, you know, to basically be around them. So that's probably what you find. They can work so much later into their careers, they're actually mature enough to understand how lucky they are.
Before we move on to a couple of other topics, we'll just sit on the puppet for one more question. What has been his greatest strength as a driver? He's clearly been a great reinventor of himself. We know that he went through not a chasm, but a little lull, I guess, at the start of the 2000s. He's built his way back up to being the number one driver in Victoria and probably Australia again. So he's been a great reinventor of himself. I think he's changed his style a little bit with his association with some American drivers over the last 4 or 5 years. But what has been his greatest strength?
Learning to get away from the whip. That's where Australasian harness racing is going. Chris used to hit them too hard. A lot of young people do. You know, they want every race to be the grand final. And he hit Golden Rain too hard back in the day. But that was the era we lived in. You know, that era's changed now. And Chris has been able to say, by getting on tight reins, getting on the front foot, and also making sure that the horse doesn't lose momentum, that he is able to get the best out of them. You don't have to club horses to get the best out of them. If you go back to videos of 20 years ago and how we used to drive horses and look at them now, sometimes quite simply I'm ashamed. But at the time it seemed normal, much like thuggery and rugby league seemed normal 30 years ago, whereas these days it's not so normal. So I think the ability to reinvent himself and realise, as the good jockeys do, that clubbing horses doesn't help most of them. And Chris has come to that and thought, okay, I learnt to do one thing, I'll change my style, and he's now a far, far kinder driver. And, of course, that comes with maturity as well.
Switching tack now, Michael, I'd like to hear the latest on the Australian invites to the Jewels. Are there any more to come, and do you expect Victorian Mayor Rockstar Angel to be there?
Well, the news is that she has had a little bit of a soreness issue. She's going to head to Menangle next Saturday, not the Saturday, the Saturday after, and race. And if they're happy with her, they want to fly her across to New Zealand on the Monday. The problem with that is, the fields actually come out on the Friday before. So if she's declared in the field, doesn't race well at Menangle on that Saturday night and scratches, she probably costs another horse's spot in the race. So I'm hoping there's some clarification around that in the next 10 days where they can decide, yes, we're coming or no, we're not coming. She's in the four-year-old mares, which she couldn't have won 3 months ago. Would have been up against Dream About Me, Piccadilly Princess and Golden Goddess. Two of them are no longer there. Golden Goddess was pulled out, I believe, prematurely. I believe the connections made a mistake pulling her out after a failure the other day. Dream About Me was pulled out because she had ongoing leg issues. All of a sudden, it's not a brutally hard four-year-old mares crop. If she comes over, do I expect her to win? Probably not. But do I think we could see the first Australian-trained winner of a Jewels? Yes, I do. One Muscle Hill was very impressive, winning the two-year-old race at Addington last Friday. He's at least as good as his rivals for Nicole Melander. While he's been in New Zealand for a while, Nicole and her husband Dean have actually been training the horse. Mark Purden, who he's staying with, has had no input into the training. He could become the first Australian-trained winner of a Jewels at Ashburton. That's 2 weeks this Saturday, and he's actually favourite in all the markets for the two-year-old Ruby. That's the two-year-old trot. So there'll be at least two Australians there, because Mr. Mojito, who resumes a Saturday at Melton, is also coming across. Rockstar Angel, I would say 50-50 at the moment, but signs are looking positive, and her division is looking slightly easier.
Finally, mate, we should touch on the varying fates of two old adversaries before we let you go across the past 7 days. Bowtie, of course, coming to the end of it, retiring about a week ago to the day, and Chris and me restarting his career with a brilliant victory in North America over the weekend.
Yeah, it's sad to see Bo go. What a wonderful horse, and James Rattray handled him so well. The Chris and me one's an interesting one. There's been a real want in Victorian harness racing over the last 10 years, and I'm not sure where it came from, to be honest, to align ourselves with Sweden. And I think it's a mistake. I think Swedish harness racing doesn't sell in Australia, and I think that they saw us, oh, don't want to see our harness racing. I do think when you start seeing Chris and me, bit of a legend and an army of Australian and New Zealand horses in North America, the time for us to internationalise our product and the best place to internationalise our product, both in reverse, us betting on them and having better form guides and the other way around, is North America. And when you see horses like Chris and me go to North America, it makes you wonder, while we haven't worked closer with North America, I think Harness Racing Victoria has made a mistake in the last 10 years by trying to align themselves too much with Sweden and the romance of the Elite Loppet. It's one race. The Swedish harness racing experiment has not worked. The V75 has not worked. It's time to at least try and align ourselves better with North America, because so many of our good horses are going to end up there.
This is really interesting stuff for you. How long has this been percolating in your mind?
Well, mate, it's been wrong for years. The bottom line is there's a very powerful people in harness racing, and particularly in harness racing in the state of Victoria, who believe Sweden's the go, because they want to go there every May and go to the Elite Lop and say they went to Elite Lop. I've been to 7 or 8 Elite Lops. It's a great day in the sun, but you can't base your economic decisions around Swedish harness racing. The Swedish harness racing officials are very arrogant. They have no interest in our horses. They don't send any horses down this part of the world. Whereas North American horses, if we want to have an Inter Dominion or a Miracle Mile, we are chances of getting their pacing horses down because they can come here and stand at stud as shuttle stallions. So it's been happening for a long time, and people don't want to hear this because they're personally involved. Basically, Jason, they all wanted to get their free trip to Sweden in May. Well, those days are gone, and we have to closely align ourselves with North America. It's the most obvious product for us to internationalise ourselves with.
All right. Well, we appreciate your time this morning, Mick. And I'll tell you what, I'm really looking forward to hearing more from you on this issue because I think it's pretty big news. If you're sort of suggesting that a complete reversal of attitude from the past, I don't know, 10 or 15 well, years, at least the well, past Jason, decade has to be undertaken.
Jason, you've worked at Harness Racing Victoria. Has the Swedish thing worked at all? Do you get any blowback on Sweden? Do you get any feedback on Sweden? Has anybody ever said to you, ever, I'm sitting down tonight to have a bet on the Swedish trots apart from Elite Lock Day? Ever?
No, and I can tell you what, the young drivers and the people in the sport here, they still look to America. They get excited about going to America when the International All-Star Series was on. There is definitely a synergy between Australasian harness racing and North American harness racing. You're dead right, and for some reason, it's just lied prostrate in the water for some time, which, you know, I guess the focus had to be in one direction or another, but just so interesting to hear your thoughts that it's gone the wrong way, and you're very, very confident that we have to basically pull the plug and change our focus again.
I sure am, buddy. It's a conversation for another day. Thanks for the chance to talk to people around New South Wales. And as I leave, congratulations not only to Chris Alford, but of course to James Rattray with the wonderful job he did with the monster of an angle and bowtie.
All right, thanks very much to Michael Guerin and some really interesting news. We're now joined by Brad Hewitt. How are you, Brad?
Good day. How you going, mate?
I'm pretty well, mate. I'm pretty good. You're heading down to Victoria this weekend to campaign Spare Me Days in the 4 and 5 year old championship. He's been a wonderful horse for you, mate. Two Group 2 wins, third in the Victoria Derby. He's a 3 year old. You must have a real soft spot for him.
Yeah, so James is putting ourselves. He's one of the strongest players in here, so he's looking on a fun place to go on.
This is an interesting 4 and 5 year old championship too, mate, just looking at the noms in the field. The last few years we've seen the race dominated by the Lennies and the Hectors of this world, but there doesn't seem to be that out-and-out superstar this year. Does it boost your confidence levels that with the right draw you might be able to get the job done?
Yeah, still, guys, just going to hope for a decent draw, but there's a lot of good horses in there. Still a pretty even field, like, my head. I don't know if he's been trolling down there or anything, but yeah, he's drafting him and Ben Holm, I'll probably be fine and anything for love. But it's still going to be who has the best run and the draw in the rest of the stuff.
Now, you certainly deserve a change of luck, mate. Just briefly chatting with you yesterday, a few of the more promising stable stars have run into trouble recently. Can you give us a quick update on My Casino Bell, She's a Sharpie, and also Arm of the Gun?
Yeah, My Casino Bell, she's been there. She just put her out for a month in the paddock. And so we've been to Sam, and she's a 10, and this year in third, and from nothing, she's been sore ever since, and been trying to get her in. And she had to have a skull operation or just sort of decided to go to Sam's in the paddock with her and keep that off our stalls. And Sam out, had a lot of injury, he fractured the one of these. Held on, we had that before the chariot on play, so he's going to have another 3 or 4 months out as well, so the team's a bit depleted at the moment.
All right, mate. Well, you might have run over a black cat and smashed a mirror there, mate, but hopefully your luck's going to turn and Spare Me Days. Hopefully he runs a big race for you down in Victoria on the weekend.
Yeah, I think we're still flying the side to the stable, so hopefully he can pick a good one.
All right, thanks very much there to Brad Hewitt. And now joined, I'm hoping, by Ashley Grives on the line. Good morning, Ash. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you. Now, do you want the good news or the bad news?
Oh, good first, I guess.
All right, the good news is I'm pretty confident that my spies tell me, I'm not sure whether the fields are out yet or not, but I think that Amaretto and My Lucky Bell will both get a run in Saturday night's Group 1 Queen of the Pacific, which I know will please you greatly.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be fabulous.
There was no bad news. It was just all good news. Donald Trump's still leading the free world. That's the bad news. Let's start with Amaretto. I don't think any harness racing fan would doubt her talent. She's placed in a Breeders' Crown and a Breeders' Challenge final along with a Queensland Oaks. But in many ways, it sort of feels she hasn't quite fulfilled her outstanding talent. She deserves a big race win at some juncture, doesn't she?
Yeah, look, she certainly does, and it's been pretty disappointing throughout her career that we just haven't been able to get that feature with her, because she's the sort of mare, she's got a stack of ability and she's raced in that top level her whole career, and just sort of was always good enough to get one, but either ran into a better one or the draw sort of hurt her, or she did sort of things wrong where she shouldn't have, and yeah, definitely cost herself a couple of times for that reason. But look, she's still young and she's sound, and we've had a couple of hiccups along the way this preparation, but I'm confident I've got her just about spot on. So obviously it's a very good mare's field on Saturday night, but hopefully with a bit of luck we can certainly get her form back up to the mare that she is.
The figure form line right now, Ash, would suggest she might be a little bit up against, not going quite as well as she can on Saturday night to snare that big Group 1 win. But she is going a little bit better than it looks in your eyes, isn't she?
Yeah, definitely. During the Ladyship Mile, I should say, everything sort of went downhill from there. She sustained a flat tyre that run going into the first turn and carried that the whole way. We sort of had a really hot month with training here where she went off, and she's just had a couple of problems along the way where I sort of thought she's been okay, but just sort of hasn't. And then she sort of did a couple of things in her runs and that. So she thought she has had excuses, but in saying that, she's had a couple of, sort of things go wrong. But her last run at Menangle, although on paper doesn't look good, she got home in 53 that night and attacked the line really well from a luckless draw. And I'm confident, you know, the way she pulled up after that run and how easily she did do that, I'm pretty confident she's back to her best now.
And quickly, what about My Lucky Bell? She did run fourth in a Ladyship Mile, so is she a bit of a big game player that can thrive under the pressure of a race like the Queen of the Pacific?
Yeah, look, she's a really nice mare. Her first step up, she's still only an MO, but her first step up to the better company was the Ladyship Mile series. And look, she ran fourth in that, and she was just the sort of mare that kept improving every week and drawn like. When she's sort of driven cold against those better mares, she seems to go a lot better when the speed's sort of more genuine, and she can really sort of be driven for speed. She seems to go a lot better, which she proved through that Ladyship campaign. She's sort of probably been up against some bad draws and where we've sort of probably driven her a bit tougher her last few runs. But I drove her off the speed on Saturday night and I was really impressed with the way she hit the line. Again, she got home from last in 54 and 26 home and did that really easy. So she's going well, but yeah, I'm confident as she sort of steps up to the better grade and can be driven a bit quieter, she certainly does go better.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Ash. Be good to see you down at Tabcorp Park, Melton, on the weekend, and good luck with the two mares.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks very much.
All right, that winds us up for another episode of On the Pace. I think we've got through relatively unscathed, Cozzy, so now I can duck off and continue the preparation for In the Gig tonight.